Welcome to The Leap with Japa, the podcast that bridges continents and connects stories. Join us as we dive into the vibrant world of international education, explore diverse cultures, and share the extraordinary journeys of students far from home. Whether you're dreaming of studying abroad or already embarking on this adventure through other means, Leap with Japa is your companion in navigating the exciting, challenging, and transformative world of global education. Let's leap into today's episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Leap with Japa. Continuing our monthly tradition, after a fantastic March series, we are excited to bring you the April edition of our interview saga. This month, we're unfolding the engaging three-part story of Anand Sekhar, a manufacturing engineer with roots in India and branches reaching into the US industry. In this first episode, Engineering the Dream, Anand Sekhar's Global Leap Part 1, we delve into Anand's initial steps from his academic beginnings to navigating the waters of international education and career building. Join us as we share Anand's relatable tales of transitioning cultures, the support systems that matter, and the pursuit of professional passion. Whether you're planning your own journey abroad or just love to listen to a good story of ambition and achievement, this series is crafted for you. Let us get into the heart of Anand's experience and see what lessons we can take away. Welcome to our April story with Leap with Japa. So welcome, Anand. How are you?
Hey, Syed. I'm good, good. How are you?
Yeah, welcome to the show. So I have Anand here. He's a manufacturing engineer, lean manufacturing machining engineer with, what's your company name again? It's GKN?
So I work, it's called GKN Driveline. They have automotive, aerospace. They are all over the world. Like a multinational company, and their headquarters is in Poland. I joined this company 8 months ago. It's doing good. They're manufacturing, I would say, like 60% of the world's car have their parts.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah, okay. It's big one. It's big.
Oh, okay. I'm particularly happy because this your background is not a traditional software engineering background. You know, so I like the diversity in the experience. Just to give people a backdrop, Anand reached out to me on a podcast Facebook group. He was looking to get people to test his application. We'll talk about the application later on. But you know, Anand, his last name is, what's your last name? Sekhar? Anand Sekhar?
Yeah.
Is that a short form or the long form?
No, that's my name. So there's there's a fun fact I want to tell. So
yeah,
my last name is actually my father's name.
Oh, okay.
So in India, especially in the state of Tamil Nadu, where I am from, in the 1960s, the minister of Tamil Nadu, he told not to add the family name because through the family name, people will get to know the caste, what their caste system
is.
So they started having the father's name as last name.
That's the
history behind it. Yeah.
So I know they also did that in Mongolia, where most people don't actually have they take their father's name instead of their last name, and their passport. I think it was more of a socialist regime kind of thing. I don't know why they asked them to do, but that's actually quite interesting that you would do that. So that means your last name can identify your caste. So things like I know an example is that most people with a Singh last name are usually of a particular religion, for example. Everybody has the same last. Is that something? Is that how you mean?
Yeah, you can see Patel, Singh.
Oh, yeah.
All these are family names. So with the last name, you can exactly say which background, which state, which language they speak.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Oh, okay. That's good to know. Well, welcome. Welcome. And one of the things that I want to start with is, can you tell us about your journey from India to becoming a grad student in the US? What was that like?
Sure. So I did my undergrad in India. I did my mechanical engineering.
Okay.
And after that, I was working in an oil and gas company called Saipem India.
Okay.
I worked there for a couple of years. And then I joined my dad. My dad has a small scale manufacturing industry. He's a supplier for TAFE. Yeah.
Oh, so you've been doing manufacturing for a while, even as a kid.
Yes, I was growing up seeing my dad, you know, working in a company, not working, like working with metals.
Okay. Okay.
They do a fabrication job. So it's like complete a job is like 25 kilogram. So we go to our dad's company.
Right.
So I've seen working and I got interested in this field.
Okay.
In fact, I wanted to do computer science engineering, but then undergrad, the first year I took computer science engineering, somehow I didn't get that connection. That's not in me. So I switched over to manufacturing engineering, mechanical engineering.
Because I know a lot of Indians study computer science. I think you're the second person I've met from India that did mechanical engineering and is working. The first person works in an automotive industry. He's working with, I think it's the Chinese electric car manufacturer. It's in Santa Clara somewhere. That's where he was working. And I found that very strange. Like, you didn't do computer science, you did mechanical engineering. Let us know, how did you, after you completed your undergrad, so how did you get into grad school?
So after that, I was with my dad, and then I thought, I want to go abroad. I want to see other countries. I want to experience the different culture.
Right.
So I started looking at, where to go. It's good because my friends they went to UK, US, Australia to do their masters. And I was wondering, let me also do this. And I want to do this.
Right.
So I started exploring, in my field, manufacturing, and I found US has good schools.
Okay.
UK, it's 1 year program, and I don't feel comfortable with that. So I thought, US, now what? Okay. Then I went to consulting agent.
Right.
And I asked them, hey, what should I do? So they told me, what do you want to do? They gathered some information, made a list of universities that offer. Then I thought to myself, I don't want to pay the consultants to do this. You know, I want to do my homework. I started looking online, gathered all the information. Then I finalized 2-3 universities. Okay. I sent out application.
Okay.
And I finally got admitted in one of the universities, Bradley University in Peoria, Illinois.
Okay.
And that's how my journey started.
Is Bradley a private university or is it a public university?
It's a private university.
Okay. So did you have to do any GRE, any TOEFL? Did you have to do any of that?
Yes. To apply to the US universities, I would say like 90% of the universities expect GRE.
Okay.
TOEFL, maybe a few universities, but GRE, it's a must for 90% of the universities. They want to see the capability of the student before they get admitted. So GRE is kind of like a preliminary process. They can easily eliminate candidates, you know, if they don't have a good score.
Okay, so for Indian students and recent grads, would you advise them to use the consultants, or do you just advise them to do it by themselves? What is the drawback of doing it by yourself as opposed to doing it with a consultant?
So first thing, I would suggest do it yourself. The reason is, if you go to consultants, first, they have a set of universities.
Oh, okay.
And they will be like, okay, this university, go to here, go here, go here. I know people went here. So they just try to focus on some things. It's good to know the process, but don't give your money to somebody to do what you have to do. You do your homework. It may take some time. Just do your research. Because right now, internet, it's everything available for free, all the information. So just do your homework, do the research, and whatever courses you want, you can just type in and see what universities offer the course and make shortlist based on so many reviews.
Okay.
You can ask people. You can even directly contact the college and, you know, get some information. So I would say consultants is an easier way to go. But if you really want to dig deep, I would suggest, you know, do the homework yourself.
Okay. So how much do these consultants typically take, and how many schools do they help you with?
So they charge based on number of schools, I guess. It's like more than 10, 11 years ago. So I vaguely remember. But I think they can provide like 3 schools.
Okay.
More than that, they will charge more. I don't know how much they charge, because the fee, they just keep increasing every year.
Right. So how did you navigate the visa process? I know it's I'm using this as a learning experience for myself to understand how things are done. I mean, I know how things are done in Nigeria. I know how the process is like. I know it's something similar to India, but what is the process like in India? You're usually at the embassy when you hear other people going through their own interviews. What is the typical reasons for rejection, you know, and how did your own experience go? Just to get an understanding for people.
So if you're a student, it's pretty straightforward. You can go to the embassy and all they ask is why you want to go.
Okay.
And where you are going and what is your motive after going there.
Right.
So you can say that, yeah, I want to go learn some things and probably I can come back to India. So students, I won't think they get rejected, because obviously they are students going to study and they are paying the fee. They are helping the economy. It's not going to hurt. Most of the rejections happen, you know, maybe if they are going for some work. So for Indian students going abroad, it's not a problem.
Oh, okay. 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 All right. That's good. So, so you got your visa, you got on a plane, you landed in it was in Illinois.
It's like 2 hours south of Chicago, Illinois.
So how cold was this? Did you know? Okay. So did you have an idea of the state you were coming into? And did you have any friends in Chicago? Or in Bradley? Because I know usually, you know, once you land and then you probably came in the fall, not the winter semester. So how was that change for you?
That's a good question. So I came in spring intake, which is January, which is the peak winter.
The peak, yes. So you came at the peak of winter.
Yes. When I did the research, I applied for 4 different schools, and one in Texas, one in Illinois, and a couple of others somewhere. I know for a fact I want to experience the 4 seasons. So Illinois is best for experiencing the bitter cold and summer, spring and fall. So I know, I'm going through this. So I already bought my stuff, like a jacket, shoes and everything in India. I was ready to face this.
Okay.
And also, I was contacting the Indian community in the university and got to know a few of the students who are there and who are also, you know, going to start their journey.
Okay.
I went to one of the students' home in Chennai before I left. I met his parents.
Parents, okay.
And I got some information. Then I contacted that guy and he said, hey, come, you know, you can stay with me.
Right.
You can be my roommate. So that all happened because I contacted the university, the Indian Association. I got some information.
Okay.
So when I boarded the flight, and that flight journey was horrible. It's like the first time I'm traveling like 24 hours.
Oh no. So how many connecting flights did you have to take?
I had to take one connecting flight.
Okay.
Sometimes two, but okay. That flight is like a non-stop 14-hour flight.
Oh no. I remember my own flight. At some point you just said, "You know what? This plane, I'm not going anymore. Just land. Land anywhere you want to land. I want to go back." You must have been brutal.
That was a horrible experience. But that's the first time, you know, long in a flight. And then I got used to it, but the first time was horrible. So I would suggest, you know, take some precautions when you take a long flight.
Okay.
So I landed in Chicago. It was great. I took a bus from Chicago to Peoria. Okay. I did the homework, how to, you know, get to Peoria. I told the friend who I was talking to. So he was waiting at the bus stop. And as soon as I landed, you know, got off from the bus, he took me to his room.
Okay.
Then it was good. I slept. I mean, for next 7 days, the jet lag was terrible. I was sleeping in the daytime like crazy.
Right.
That's like a 12-hour difference from India to US. So it took me like at least a week or two to get over the jet lag.
So based on just this first set of things you've said, what is, you know, there are lots of things you've said. So what is the one advice you would give not just Indian students, but also any international students? So you can see how much work you put in. You had to do research, you reached out to the school to let the school know that you were coming. They gave you access to, or you found the Indian community and you reached out to someone. So what is the one advice you would give? Because some people just show up and assume that everything would work out.
So one advice I would give to anybody from any country is, every university has an international student association. Every university.
Okay.
Yes. Just send an email, or if you want to call them, contact with them. There is a Facebook group. Internet is there. Just use it. Get to connect with anybody there from their develop a network, contact. There may be somebody from your country or from your state. You know, contact them. Ask questions before you go there. Get to know people. And first thing, for accommodation is a big thing. So you can't afford to get a dorm in the US. It's very expensive. So you have to live off campus.
Okay.
To live on campus, it's also expensive. So best thing to do is get a roommate.
Okay.
So before you fly there,
finding a roommate would be to use one of the, either reach out to the international student body or reach out to the Facebook groups of, you know, international students. Let's say maybe you have an Indian community or a Nigerian community, or so that would be okay. Well, that's good. So now you're in the US. The next question just leads me to the next question, that you got an assistantship. What exactly did you do to get this? And, and on top of that, what the kind of advice you would give for that?
Sure. So before I started, I have 4 years of work experience.
Okay.
So when I applied to this college, they contacted me saying that, hey, we are glad to get you admitted here.
Right.
And we are also giving a scholarship.
Okay.
I reached out to the professor. I got an email.
Okay.
From the website, I reached out to the professor saying, hey, I'm from here, blah, 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 so and so. So I explained my thing and they gave me a graduate assistant scholarship.
Okay.
So, which is really great. And that gave me like a tuition waiver.
Okay. So you didn't have to pay any tuition.
Well, it's like a 50% waiver.
50%. So you paid in-state tuition, probably. You didn't have, because I know usually when there's some graduate assistantship that just waives some tuition. Like for me, I had to pay only in-state tuition. So maybe how much was the original tuition that you were supposed to pay, and how much did you end up paying?
I think it was 23,000 I ended up paying $12,000.
Okay, so most likely you probably paid in state.
Yeah, I don't know how much is the in state, but yes, 50% is a huge deal for me.
It's a huge, yeah, it's huge, yeah.
Yes. And then after I joined, I spoke to the professor, and I also got like a 20-hour graduate teaching assistant program, so I can teach the undergrad and I assist the professor in grading the sheets. Right. So that gave me, like, apart from the scholarship, I had like 10 hours of teaching assistantship program that paid me. So the university paid me every week. So that was a big deal. Yeah.
And that was helpful to pay your, I don't know how expensive that area is. Was that able to help cover your cost of living at least?
Sure. Yeah, it did. So as a student, we can work 20 hours a week legally. Yep. So 10 hours I got in teaching assistantship. The other 10 hours I worked as a, I worked in the cafeteria. I worked in, you know, like a janitorial thing. So I did everything in the in campus. So.
On the campus to make sure that you could just, you could cover your 20 hours.
Exactly. Okay, I was, you know, I've been able to pay my rent, my food with this. So no problem.
Okay. I also noticed that you got a scholarship. Aside from the, you got the Graduate Leadership and Service Award, Dean's Award. You also got this, what's it called? Marjorie Reynolds Scholarship recipient. So how did you apply for that? So what kind of advice would you give? Because a lot of people, so one thing I've noticed with people is they sit in their home countries and say they want these scholarships, but I keep on telling them, if you don't show up, if you're not in front of the dean or in front of your department, no one's going to hand you a scholarship if you sit all the way in your country. So you always get this, oh, I want a scholarship. I want to come and study grad school. I want a scholarship. So what did you do to get these scholarships? I've listed on your LinkedIn. So this will probably help people to understand that you have to be here. You can't want a scholarship from abroad.
Correct. Man, that's good.
Yeah.
Glad you brought it up. It's a story. So when I landed in the US, in that college, I met people from, it's a small association called Bridges International. It's in every country. And also PAFIS, which is Peoria Area Friends for International Students. I think that's in particular for that Bradley University, I guess.
Okay.
So these are families. So they invite international students to their home. They invite for dinner.
Okay.
They take you out for, if you want grocery, they can take you out. They can teach you driving lessons. So it's like a group of families. They help international students.
So
as soon as I landed, I got connected with these people. I showed up to the event. They have like a expo kind of thing. And so I just spoke to the people. I got to know them.
Okay.
And that's how I got like a network. So when it came, after a year of, in my second year of my master's.
Yeah.
So they got this, I was told, hey, there is a scholarship coming up.
Okay.
You can nominate yourself and you, you can. So yes, this was listed publicly.
Okay.
Then I thought, okay, I can nominate myself, but I need recommendation letters. So since I am connected with all these people, I got recommendation letter from two and three families.
Okay.
And I got recommendation letter from my lab in charge.
Okay.
I was teaching undergrad in the manufacturing lab.
Okay.
And the lab in charge, I got recommendation from him, one from my professor.
Okay.
So it, if you have a good network, you can get recommended. And that's how I got that scholarship.
Right.
The other one, it's called like a Parents Association certification, where you can, you know, tell the university, hey, I was involved in all these activities. I was helping students. I was helping the incoming international students. They can talk to me. And I was recognized for that. The Dean's Award That's for my research project. So at the end of 2 years, I have to present a research.
Okay.
I presented it with the help of my professor. And,
right.
You know, among all those research were presented, mine was selected and I was given a Dean's Award for that.
Okay. That's how okay. It. Oh, that's very good. And this is quite helpful because I know that lots of families that actually do help. So I hope people listening will understand that sometimes you actually have to be here physically to yes. take advantage of whatever scholarships that are here, because you can imagine people here are here already, and then people outside, you can't imagine, they can't prioritize people outside the country. Mm-hmm. They'll have to give people inside the country first before they think about giving scholarships to people outside the country. Thank you for tuning into this episode of Leap with Jackma. I hope it brought you valuable insights and stories that resonate with your journey. If you have any thoughts to share, questions, or want to send a voice note with your feedback, please visit our website at leapwithjackma.io. You will find a contact form there. I would love to hear from you and feature your voice in a future episode. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform, some of which are Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or Player FM. Your subscriptions and reviews help us grow and reach more listeners, and I truly appreciate each one of them. Also, check out our merch store on leapwithjackma.io website for some cool t-shirts and hoodies. Perfect show for showing your support for the show. Stay tuned for our next episode, where we'll dive even deeper into the experiences and challenges of international education and careers. Until then, keep leaping forward, and thanks again for being part of the Leap with Jackma community.